Calling all those who dwell in the paranormal. Calling all patriots. The time is now.
My most exciting episodes on record. And yes, that takes into account, I said that on the listener prediction episode, but this one, to me, is a show-changing episode. At the beginning of 2020, I started doing a campaign and started doing advertisements that I want to interact with you, my listener, more. I want to improve the show. So rather than hearing me speak every week for an hour on end, I want you, my listeners, to become involved in this show. And this week is the week that it begins. Because this week, waiting for us, is author and paranormal experiencer, Kevin Killen. Kevin has wrote a book entitled Ghosts and Me, and it details his paranormal encounters since he was a child. So rather than go into a long, drawn-out intro, like I normally do, we're going to forego all that. So sit back, relax, open your mind, because coming right up is paranormal author and experiencer, Kevin Killen. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back. August 27th through the 29th, 2020, the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society, the Sioux Events Incorporated, and Kewadin Casino are very proud to present the largest paranormal gathering of its kind in the Midwest. The 11th annual Michigan Paranormal Convention will yet again bring the biggest names of the paranormal industry to Michigan's oldest city, Sault Ste. Marie. The convention is held at the Kewadin Casino's Dreammakers Theater. Experts and television stars will be on hand to cover such topics as paranormal investigating, psychic abilities, demonology, and ufology. Convention goers will be able to meet some of their favorite television paranormal investigators. So join them for 2.5 days as the biggest names in the industry speak on today's hottest topic, the paranormal. Again, August 27th through 29th, 2020, at the Kewadin Casinos, the 11th Annual Michigan Paranormal Convention.
Go with a nigga that's riding the Benz. Yeah, she wanna ball at the club and get high with her friends. Yeah, she don't want to be with a nigga to follow the dreams. Yeah, she living in five, but she only trying to cut the green. Yeah, she wanna go with a nigga that's riding the Benz. Yeah, she wanna ball at the club and get high with her friends. Yeah, she don't want to be with a nigga to follow the dreams. Yeah, she living in five, but she only trying to cut the green.
Yeah. Alrighty, so this is very exciting for me. Now, I am not the best guy at interviews. I've only done a couple, but waiting for us on the other line is Kevin Killen. And I am so excited to introduce him to you. Now, as I mentioned before, I've been trying to increase the exposure and the variety of this show. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce to you author and paranormal experiencer, Kevin Killen. Kevin, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here. It is a pleasure to have you on the Paranormal Patriot.
Thank you for having me, Tom. I appreciate you guys wanting me on the show, and I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. I think our listeners are going to enjoy our conversation immensely, but let's just get into it. So you are a published author, and can you tell the listeners the title of the book and what it's about?
Sure. My book is called Ghosts and Me, and it is basically about my 40-plus years with experiences of the paranormal in a few different states and my current workplace, which is actively haunted as we speak. So I chronicle from my first experience at 5 years old in Chicago up until about 2 years ago in my current workplace, and some of my girlfriend lives in Maryland, and some of the things that have gone on in her house kind of end the book. But that's it in a nutshell.
Now, where are you located presently?
I'm located in Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay.
Just right outside of D.C.
Yeah, very historic.
Yes.
So when did the book get published? When did you have this published?
It was published last June, as a matter of fact. And here's something I tell people. I try not to do this, but I guess it's not that big of a deal. I don't want to be accused of tugging at the heartstrings. The day it actually got published is the day I had a heart attack.
Really?
Yeah, so one of my coworkers kind of joked that I'd be a bar trivia question. What author had a heart attack the same week his book was released? And that would be me, of course.
Well, now I know the answer.
But that was interesting. And like I said, I think everything happens for a reason, and that was interesting because I'm still here. But it was a little touch and go there for a while.
Wow. Well, now I know the answer to that trivia question. So before we get into what you've experienced and what you write about in the book, where can the listeners purchase this book?
Okay, they can purchase it at Amazon.com. It can be purchased at my publisher's website at OzarkMountain.com, Ozark Mountain Publishing, BarnesandNoble.com, and pretty much everywhere you can buy books online. And again, it is in Barnes & Noble and a couple other bookstores that I can't really think of off the top of my head, but all the major places that it can be purchased.
And how's it doing so far? I'm assuming very well.
It's doing pretty well.
Good.
It's doing pretty well. Like I said, again, that's one thing I really love about doing these shows is because I get to talk about this, and this is like one of my passions, obviously, but I get to like to promote the book and some of my theories and things like that. But it's doing pretty well, and hopefully it'll gain some more steam in the coming year. So I'm excited about that.
So what made you want to write a book that chronicled your paranormal encounters?
Well, I tell you what, I was having a lot of what I understand now is part of I'm an empath, and for anybody that listeners who understand what empathy is, I feel emotions and I'm able to sense things, and I was doing that a lot as a kid and growing up, and I was having a lot of these weird coincidences, like I'd see three numbers on a clock and something would happen, or I would think about somebody I haven't heard about in a long time and they'd call me or contact me, or I'd think about a obscure song on the radio and lo and behold, either the band would play or that song would play, and I was just like, you know, gee, this is going on a lot, what's going on? And then I thought about some of the experiences with the paranormal that I've had again since I was a child, and I kind of just started journaling. And then it kind of morphed into a book. And this has been about a 15-year process from first word until publication. So it's been a bit of a journey.
It took you 15 years to start the idea of a book to get it published?
No, it actually took 15 years from the first day, the first word I wrote to publication.
Wow. That's a labor of love right there.
Yeah, and I actually used to keep the rejection slips. And I had plenty of those, but I kept at it, and luckily I was able to finally get published this year, last year, with Ozark Mountain. So I owe them a debt of gratitude, and they've been great.
Good. Good. So I've been reading your book, and you have had numerous encounters since, I believe it was, what, 4 or 5 in Chicago? With your mother sitting and hearing the footsteps upstairs. And what did she say? That's her little boy?
Yes.
What did you ever figure out what she meant by that?
Well, the only thing I can really figure out is first of all, when I spoke with her later on, before she passed, she's been passed about 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But I did talk to her a little bit, and she was a little leery of talking to me about the paranormal because I think she had a lot of vision and some sight, but she never let on about that. But I did get her to open up a little bit. She did remember that. And she told me that because she didn't want me to be afraid because she thought that somebody broke into the house.
Okay, so
yeah, that was her way of it just confused me, but it was just, she said it spur of the moment. I couldn't really think of anything else because she was really scared because, again, she thought somebody broke in upstairs.
Okay,
so.
Yes, because when I'm reading it, I'm thinking, okay, did she have a child that she miscarried and that's her little boy? That was my first thought.
Yes, and that was the other thing. That was the other thing that I think later on, because I don't remember her miscarrying, but she did miscarry. So that was, again, later on, that was something that she told me that, again, that made no sense to me. But thinking back on it now and how things worked, that very well could have been, you know, my brother or sister. I guess my brother at the time. But so that was the other thing. But she didn't explain that to me till much later.
Okay, so basically you think it was just to protect you?
Yes.
Okay. So what is the one encounter that convinced you that ghosts exist? If you can go through all your encounters, and is there one that you say, this is the time when I knew ghosts exist?
Wow, that's a good one. Yes, I would have to say, when I was in high school, right after I got out of high school, I talk about this in the book, I lived in a very active house growing up, but we had a lot of foot traffic. I had three brothers and my mother, yep. And they had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends, so it was usually never quiet. And when it was, you'd hear weird things and this and that. So one day, I found myself no one in the house, like totally alone. And I was like, okay, well, great. I'm going to go ahead and try to do an EVP session and see what I get. So I went ahead and did that. And lo and behold, I got some sort of voice that I describe as really demonic, because it really sound, I hate using that term, but it was a really gruff sounding voice and said, ha ha, I've shown you ha ha. And I had actually asked that question before I started taping, if there's anything here, please show me.
And that is when you left the room, though, right?
Right. And that was after I'd done that, because that scared the hell out of me, because I was like, okay, something answered me and there's nobody here. So that's really when I really was like, okay, there is something out there. What is it?
And did you have, you were interested in the paranormal at a young age, correct?
Yes.
And how did you get into that? Was it because of the encounters that you had as a child, or it was just something you were naturally drawn to?
You know, I think it was something I was naturally drawn to, because I remember growing up and reading like every book in the library that dealt with, you know, ghosts and vampires and things like that. And there wasn't too many back then, actually. And this, we're talking like the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s when I was a kid. But I was an avid reader, and me and my friends used to trade these books. And most of them were, you know, ghost books from the 60s. And Hans Holzer was one of the first I actually remember reading his book, Dixie Ghosts, when I was about 10. And I just pretty much anything I could get my hands on. And I read and reread, and then I kind of just, you know, built into, you know, a lifelong love and curiosity, what is out there.
And you had, as you were growing up and got older in your adult years, you had the, I don't even know what the word would be, but the joy of having what you called a witch, or some people may call it a medium, that lived with you, Cheryl and her kids, right?
Yes.
So you had somebody that could collaborate and say, yes, you there's a person or there's a ghost in this house. And a lot of people, I think, would love that, but you had that opportunity. Now, do you think because she was with you and she was able to draw in those spirits that you had more spiritual encounters or more, I guess, ghostly entities in your presence? Or do you think you are just drawn to them, or they're drawn to you, I should say?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Like I said, she was very good. Well, she still is, actually. I'm still in contact with her. She's still a good friend of mine.
Good.
She still is good. But yeah, she is really good. So it was a combination, I think, of things that she did and the powers and things that she could do. But I've always been a beacon, and I'm just finding that out, that I'm kind of like the motel sign, the blinking vacancy sign on the side of the road. They see that and they're like, oh, hey, he can hear us and talk to us. Let's make a beeline for him. And I'm like a ghost magnet. And I hate using that word, but I think it is. So yeah, it's a little bit of both.
Well, and that's one of the questions I was going to ask you is, it seems like everywhere you went, when you were in Chicago and then you moved to Virginia, then you moved to what was the college in Pennsylvania? The old one with the graveyard.
Yeah, thank you.
What was it?
Waynesburg.
Yes.
Waynesburg.
It seems like wherever you went, activity followed you. Now, is it just because you just moved to historic locations that tend to support ghostly encounters, or do you think they follow you or they're attracted to you? Or is it a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think they definitely follow me. I think they're definitely attracted to me. I was actually speaking with a friend of mine the other day. We were talking about historic places. Now, I've been to a ton of historic places, not so much lately because it's time consuming and I just haven't had the time. But they asked me, hey, do you pick up more if you're in, like, say, I live like 3 miles down the road from Mount Vernon. And I haven't been there since I was a kid. And they're like, hey, do you pick up things on something like that? And, honestly, I have a pretty huge bucket list of places I want to visit that are haunted. But I've never tested that theory out. And it is actually kind of interesting to see if maybe these historic places, what I'll pick up from that. But I think it's a little bit of both with me, yeah.
Okay. And in your book, one of the first things you said is, I've never been on a paranormal investigation. Has that changed since the book has been published?
Unfortunately, no, it hasn't. I keep touching base with certain people, and excuse me, for some reason or another, everything kind of falls through, and I'm just not able to do that. And unfortunately, and now with the winter coming on, that it's kind of hard because most groups really don't research unless they're inside, which is fine.
Right.
So some of the local groups here aren't really doing anything right now. So, yeah, no, I've yet to do that, but I'm still looking forward to my first time.
Okay. So in all of your encounters, have you felt something evil? Have you been – well, I know you've been touched because I read about the whole shower incident where you felt the cold envelop you.
Right.
And that was, if I'm not mistaken, a young lady from the 1700s is what you were told?
Yes.
Have you ever felt like pure evil? Or have you felt like, okay, this one I don't want to mess with? Because from where I've gotten the book, it seems like most of the ghosts that you've encountered have just been, they're attached to that place. They're curious. Have you ever had an incident where you felt that this thing isn't really a ghost? This is something, I remember the, was it the Ouija board incident?
Yes.
Yes. Tell us about that one.
Okay. When I was in school and in Waynesburg, I was dating Cheryl at the time, and we had some friends that didn't really believe in this. And so one of her really good friends' boyfriends was really adamant about being a non-believer. And so we got the bread. She was like, we're going to show him. So I was like, okay. So we did a circle and we did a channeling session. during this channeling session, this being, I guess, what it was really weird looking. I can't really, to this day, it was just very, very evil.
You could see it?
Yeah, I saw it in my mind's eye, definitely. We all did. And so this thing that was channeled from there, it broke the circle. So when we all saw it, we all jumped back, like, what the hell was that? So we didn't close the circle properly. And we all started being affected in different ways. My personality changed tremendously to the point where I don't want to use possession word because I don't like that. But it was I think if you look at the demonic sayings, or the stages of such things, I think I was in the oppression stage. That's how I would describe this. Total personality change, just turning into a basic, a real jerk. Like, didn't want to talk to anybody. I was rude to people. Isolated myself, drank a lot, things like that. I knew something wasn't right. But yeah, this thing was prevalent, and I knew it was something that was not of this earth. It was not a human entity at all. It was definitely evil. So finally, I told her, I said, look, you've got to close this circle. We got to get rid of this thing. So she finally did, and everything lightened up, and everything got back to what it was. But yeah, that's the closest I've been to. I don't want to be around it again because that was a pretty awful time.
So do you honestly think it was demonic, or you're not really sure at this point?
I'm honestly not really sure. I hate to use the word demonic because I know that's like the big, go-to word. Yep. With a lot of normal things these days, and it's like easy to jump to that conclusion. This was definitely an evil spirit, whatever it was. It was evil, whatever. But I'm not really sure whether it was anything more than that. But it was evil, whatever it was. It had bad intentions.
Okay. So with that being, or that on that subject, your was it your mother from Ireland? Is that, am I correct?
Our relatives are from Ireland.
Relative, okay. You have Irish blood in you.
Yes.
You mentioned in the beginning of the book, kind of briefly, banshees. And you said the Kennedy family is supposed to have a banshee that follows them. What exactly do you know? What are banshees?
Well, from what I've understood and studied, is that the banshee is the Irish term for it, and they have many around the country in different countries. It is basically a portent of death. If you hear the wail of the banshee, you're supposed to, somebody you know or yourself is going to die. And according to Irish Celtic legend, that only high-ranking families have their own banshee, but it's not. I know I've never had one, so I guess my side of the family.
Well, it sounds like that's a good thing.
Yeah, but I know in Spanish it's called La Llorona, the crying woman.
Okay.
So it's a different variation. There's a washerwoman of the ford. I believe that's the Welsh, or maybe Scottish, but it's basically all the same. If you see these things and hear them, you're supposed to die, or somebody in your family is supposed to. But as legend goes, and I've researched and read, that the Kennedy clan has their own banshee, and that would make sense seeing it all the tragedy they've had in the last 40, 50 years. So that would totally make sense.
Yeah, it would. I just didn't know I was reading it, and I've heard of them, but I really never knew exactly what they were. So,
yeah.
So in all of your paranormal encounters, you mentioned about seeing, and this was the kids were on Christmas break and they were all outside, and you mentioned seeing a blonde, I think it was like a wisp of hair, and you thought it was one of the kids. You think that was a ghost at that time, correct?
Yeah, because it ran right through the kitchen, and all I saw was the shock of blonde hair. There was nothing else, but everybody was outside. I just happened to turn around at that exact moment and thought it was, at the time, Cheryl's youngest kid was about that old, and I thought it was him. And
did you hear anything?
I heard footsteps, yeah. That's why I turned around.
Okay.
Because I could clear, it was on the linoleum floor, so I could hear them running through there. So again, I thought it was him, and turned around and just saw like the tail end of the blonde hair disappear into the room.
And have you seen another apparition since then?
Yes. My current workplace, I believe I saw the woman who started the where I work. I believe she died some 10, 15 years ago. But as a matter of fact, this is kind of weird. I'm not sure if I touched upon that in the book or not, but as I was finishing the manuscript at work at night, I actually looked up and saw her, and she was like floating through the hallway. And I looked up, and again, I work night, so I was like, okay, who's up? And I looked around, there was nobody there. And then it hit me. I said, whoa, I've seen this person before. Who the hell is this? And we have a huge painting of her in the building. And I was like, oh my God, that was her. So that was the last one I saw. But yeah, it was clear as day. I mean, it was her.
No doubt that that was that was her.
Not in my mind. That was her. That was her. She was just, you know, checking me out, seeing how everything was going. But that was definitely her. I have no doubt in my mind that was her.
So one thing I like about your book is, and there are some people that would disagree with me on this, but a lot of times you hear something like creaking on the floor, you hear doors opening and closing, and you say in the book, can I be sure, or something to the effect, was it paranormal? I can't be sure. What I like about that is I call these people believing skeptics. Is there are so many people in the paranormal community, and it doesn't matter if you're talking about ghosts or UFOs or whatever, that anything they hear, anything they see, it's a ghost. Do you find yourself questioning what you're seeing all the time? Or, I mean, not everything's a ghost to you, right?
Right, absolutely. Like I said, in all honesty, when I first got into this and everything, and I had like a lot of friends who were into this, that's how I think I was. But I've learned to temper that, because you're right, because there are people out there that, oh my God, everything's, no, it's not. You have to see, because again, I've actually found that there are logical explanations for certain things. As a matter of fact, my one example would be in the book, I talk about footsteps on the ceiling.
Yes.
At work. But come to find out, honestly, we've had animals in there, like raccoons and possums. So I kind of wonder now, but although they did sound like human beings running across there, I'm just kind of wondering now if maybe that's what those were.
Was this the same house you were hearing Dixie and the cannons go off?
Oh, no. This was my current workplace.
Oh, your current. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying with that. When something like that happens, you tend to question that. But again, I've come to the point now where like I said, if I see or hear something, as a matter of fact, a good example would be about a week and a half ago, they were really active. I mean, I was working with another coworker, and we were both in our staff office, and we kept hearing things behind us. And this was like 2-3 in the morning. Nobody was on the floor. We heard a lot of like noises, shuffling of papers, doors closing, whispering voices, and she got freaked out. She was like, Kevin, I'm going to the other side of the building. There's something here. And I was like, I hear this all the time. I said, I'm just, hold on a minute. And I told him, I said, hey, y'all need to calm down. We know you're here and everything. And that stopped it immediately. But she came to me later. She's like, Kevin, was I crazy? I said, no. I said, this happens all the time. You know that.
So
it's
she's
me,
not a believer.
She is to a certain extent, but she's not. She hasn't had the full effect like I did. This is the first time she did, and it kind of freaked her out.
Okay. So.
But, yeah, everything is not. You have to, in this field, and again, that really irritates me with people, is that, you know, you're right. You know, I've gotten in arguments with people that, oh, no, this is this, and this is Bigfoot, or this is UFO. No, it's not. How the hell do you know that?
Right. You're exactly right. I can't tell you how many arguments I've got that somebody takes a picture and gets a dust particle that looks like a round circle and says that's a ghost. And
exactly.
It's infuriating, but that's the nature of what we investigate. So do you find that you are able, I mean, can you communicate with these ghosts? to a point, like you mentioned that you told these ghosts, okay, we know you're here, let's knock it off, and they stopped. Are you able to communicate with these ghosts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely am. Like I said, I usually when they ramp up, as I call it, I usually ask them. I said, you know, hey, you know, what do you need? What's going on? You know, or like I said, if they get really really out of control. And let me preface this by saying I work in a recovery for drug addicts and alcoholics. Okay. So it's a residential treatment facility. So there's a lot of negative energy in that building because there's a lot of negative, you know, a lot of negative spirits within themselves because of, you know, what they've been going through. So, but again, I they're not malevolent at all. They're just saying, hey, I'm here. And they know that I can hear and see them. So they come and talk to me. But again, I've had staff members, you know, coworkers go through the same thing. So I know I'm not crazy because they've all experienced things with me. And that is chronicled in the book. But yes, I am able to at least, you know, let them know, hey, you know, it's okay. And go about your business. And then after that, it's usually fine and it calms down.
So their communication with you is basically footsteps, making noise. Have you heard, aside from your EVPs, have you ever heard a voice that you can't pinpoint, that you know was there?
Yeah, definitely. We have what we call a back hallway. And this is usually, for some reason, I think that's because a lot of the foot traffic goes back there, because that's where all the primary counselors have their offices. But it was about two weeks ago, actually. I was actually coming back through the hallway there, and I heard somebody say, hey, and it was like, you know, clear as day. And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning. So I was like, okay, did I just hear that? So I went and looked. Of course, there's nobody out there, and I knew what it was, but I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't a client strolling on the floor because there was nobody there. About a week later, same place, different voice of the female that said, hey. And again, there was nobody on the floor, and I was like, okay. And one of the things that I haven't heard in a while, which is, I guess, a good thing, but I talk about it in the book, is that me and a coworker, when we walk through that community area, it'll sound like a buzz, like a restaurant where people are talking, but you can't hear what they're saying, but you can definitely hear talking. Now, we've heard that a lot.
Hmm. Does it ever get to the point where you're just overwhelmed and you're just like, I can't deal with this anymore? Or is it just a part of life now?
No, it's a part of life. And I'm, like I said, and somebody asked me once on another show that if I could give this all up, would I? And I said, absolutely not. And the reason I say that is because I've learned to segue this into like everyday life. Like I actually can go from my car to the parking lot, in the parking lot, and know, okay, this is going to be a challenging night because something's going on. I can feel the energy building. And 9 times out of 10, I can kind of head it off at the path because I know something's going to happen. So I really enjoy that. And also, like I said, they're not malevolent at all. They're just kind of saying, hey, here I am and everything. So, again, I'm still trying to figure out what it's all about, but I call it a gift. I'm glad I have it, and it used to get overwhelming, but now I kind of have found out how to temper it a little bit and to kind of wall it a little bit so it doesn't become overwhelming. So that's actually helped a lot.
So you've been dealing with this pretty much all your life. In your opinion, what are these souls that have yet to go crossover? What do you think they are? Because there's theories that it's just memories. There are theories that it's spirits. We have spirits we have a spirit and they just haven't crossed over. Do you have an idea of what ghosts, and is there a difference between a ghost and a spirit?
I believe that there is. In my research and in my experiences, I do believe that there is a definite difference between that. But one, one thing I have to say that I'm really intrigued by, and I never really thought about this before, and it's really got me thinking and doing some studying, is this theory of the multi-dimension.
Ah, yes.
Because in my mind, and I don't know if some of your listeners are a little older than me or around my age, and I'm going to date myself.
Well,
here.
My demographic, I'm assuming you're about the same age I am. I'm 48. You
yes,
grew up in
exactly
the late 70s,
the
early 80s?
Yes. Okay, good. So they'll understand this. The Pac-Man game, you remember how you could
yes.
go out one side and come out the other?
Yep.
That's kind of how I think that the multi-dimension theory works, is that there's like portals that you can come out one side and come out the other. And the reason I say that, because that really is mind-blowing to me and baffling, and actually makes a lot of sense to me, is because you've heard of these where there'll be, you know, somebody walking on a battlefield or something. They'll see what looks like a soldier, look right at them and like look right through them or not pay any attention. And they're like, what the hell is that? Now, that's often been called the stone tape theory, which basically is like a continuous loop that also makes sense to me, because I used to be into radio. So I remember the big bulk erasers and how those worked. So if you rearrange the ions, I could see how that could work too. But there's definitely a difference. And I know that there's intelligent and non-intelligent spirits. And again, I go into that a little bit in my book. But I've come across, I think, every kind pretty much. And there's definitely what they are. I just think it's the soul, in my opinion. It's the soul, the spirit's the soul of the body.
So do you think the spirit or the soul goes to another dimension and they can cross back over to this one, or are they stuck here?
I think they can go back and forth. I mean, honestly, again, with that multi-dimension, I believe they can go back and forth. They have that power. And I think some of them just choose to stay here for whatever reason, but they actually have the ability to go whether they ascend somewhere else or just kind of go into like the next room. And another thing that I tell people, and they kind of think about this, is if you think about the multi-dimension theory, we're their ghosts.
Very good point.
Yeah, that's kind of mind-blowing if you think about it. So like, I don't know if you've seen the movie The Others. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Where you thought that they were the ghosts, and it turns out that they weren't.
You know, I've never thought of it that way, but that you're right. It's mind-blowing. In another dimension, we are the ghosts.
Yeah. So if that is true, then right now, you know, I'm sitting at somebody else's table that's looking at me like, why am I hearing things or whatever? You know, I can't see them, but they can see me, and they're probably running out of the room thinking, what the hell's going on here? But that's kind of how I look at that.
That's intriguing. That just blows my mind. I love that theory. I guess I've never got into it that deep, but that is great. So, let's wrap it up here. So, a lot of my listeners, and if you've listened to the show, I call my show kind of a parapolitical show. I do a lot of politics, but I do a lot of paranormal. A lot of my listeners love the paranormal. And for somebody that is trying to do what you did and write a book about their experiences with the paranormal, what advice or how would you tell them to go about doing it?
I would tell them don't do that, because they're going to take away from my book sales.
Good answer.
No, seriously, I tell you, it's, in all seriousness, and I've found this out a lot, is that this is a very oversaturated market, and I do understand that.
Yes.
And again, I feel blessed every day that I was able to have Ozark Mountain publish me, because, again, I'd been rejected by all the other ones more than one time. But if they feel that, hey, they have a story to tell, and again, I'm actually working with people at work, some of my coworkers, not on this, but they know that I've written a book and I've been published, and they want to kind of go into, they have a story to tell too. So I've been kind of giving them pointers on kind of how to get into this. Just write it down. I mean, if you think your story is, and again, be true. I mean, don't make up shit.
Yes.
Pardon my French. No. But you see
that's
how
perfect.
And everything in this book, I will take a lie detector. I will take a polygraph that everything in there, I swear, happened to me. And everything is honest and 100%. I did not embellish anything in there. So that's what I would say. If you're going to do this, be honest. Don't say, oh, well, you know, page 34, the demon came home, that kind of thing, because you want readers to read your book. And that unfortunately does happen a lot out there. And I've seen that both with the TV and in some of the books. And it's just irritating because it's like, now you don't know what's true and what's not.
Right. All it takes is one lie to spoil the whole story.
Absolutely. And believe me, there's enough, because if anybody tells you they know what's going on, they're full of it. Cause
yes.
They don't know anything. There's everything is theory based here. We know nothing.
Right.
There's nothing 100% true that we can actually prove that, yes, this is this way and this is this way. But we do have theories, and which is awesome that we can have a nice discourse to figure out really what is going on. But we'll never know.
No, we won't until we're on the other side, I guess.
Absolutely.
So the bigger question, I guess, for me is there going to be a sequel to Ghosts and Me?
No, there's not going to be a sequel as far as I know, but I am working on another book currently.
Okay.
I'm working on Battlefield Ghosts.
Ooh.
Since I am in Civil War Battlefield country, I figured, well,
yeah,
you're
right at ground zero right there.
Yeah. So I'm working on that currently now, and it's in the very early developmental stages. And what I want to do with this book, and this lends itself to something I've wanted to do, is I'm going to tie in some history with my own investigation.
That would
be
interesting.
I'm going to go up there and take some pictures. I'm going to go up there. I'm going to try and do some EVP sessions and talk to some people. You know, it's interesting because a lot of the public, the park rangers will not talk about this. And I respect that and I understand that. So I want to try and just go up there. And I've got the EVP. I got the tape recorder, digital tape recorder. I'm just going to ask some questions and let it run. And I've got about four battlefields in mind that I'm going to work with, including Gettysburg right now.
Oh, got to go to Gettysburg.
Yeah, so hopefully if that does well, I would like to go deeper south and do some more, farther south and maybe Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, battlefields like that. So right now, not a sequel, but something else.
A different direction.
Yes. We'll deal with spirits.
Why do you think the park rangers will not talk about this? Do you think they are told not to, or they just don't want to put themselves out there? Because to me, and granted, this is something I'm very interested in, but if I have a haunted battlefield, I'm going to go to that one as opposed to just this one that's just giving me some reenactments.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's a little bit of both. And the reason why I say that is it was funny because I actually did contact four different battlefields and actually had the park rangers get back to me. And each of them said, you know, you can't be here during this time. You have to have a special permit for this and that. And I was like, okay, whatever. And I told him, I asked him, I said, you know what I'm doing? Would you guys be willing to talk to me? And usually either I got crickets or no, we won't talk about that because I've never experienced anything. And that shut that down. But I thought it was kind of interesting that I can get people off the record that will talk, but they won't talk to me directly on the record. But I've actually had park rangers in other parts will tell me, hey, don't write this down, but this happened to me. And I'm
really?
Like, well, can't you? So I think it's a little bit of both that they don't, because I think there's a lot of, especially in certain places, because here, you know, everyone, and this is a misconception, and I think a lot of people can clear this up. If you're going to go ghost hunting, okay, on a battlefield or whatever, They come out anytime they want to. They're always here. They're always
yes.
around us. You don't have to come out at midnight. You can capture anything at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I think there's a lot of ones that still don't understand that try to go at 1 o'clock in the morning and you can't do that. So the rangers have to chase them off.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit of everything.
Well, and with that being said, there's so many groups, especially in my area, because with the ghost hunter shows on TV, everybody wants to be part of a ghost hunting team. And they just go into these cemeteries and just trample all over. They don't get permission. You have to get permission before you go out there. I mean, you're just asking for trouble at that point. So I got to imagine that, yeah, it would be hard to be out in the battlefield at 1 a.m. without getting tailed off by the park rangers.
Yeah, and that's really a shame that you know, people don't want to respect that. But again, you're right. I mean, that's another thing too, is that, you know, there's steps to this whole thing. You can't just like say, oh, I watched this show and they did this. Hey, I got four. Hey, let's go to the cemetery now. Grab your recorder and tape, you know, your digital thermal or whatever, you know, and let's run around here. It doesn't work like that.
No.
But a lot of people don't want to wait for that. They think, yeah, that's another thing too, is I want to let your audience know, and I'm sure most of them, if they know the paranormal or you know, used to something like this, is that this isn't a joke. Like, you can really get into some serious stuff if you don't know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think a lot of kids, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who's from Michigan, and she's a practicing witch. So we were talking about Halloween and how the energy levels change. And I tell them every year, I said, you know, every year you got people all around the country, these kids that don't know anything, grabbing their Ouija board and running out to the cemetery at midnight. So who the hell knows what they're bringing in here?
Right. Right. Yeah, it's, you don't mess with it. It's, and I blame that on television because they make these ghost hunting shows look so interesting. But in reality, to be on a ghost investigation, it is basically 99% sitting in the dark doing nothing.
Yes. Absolutely.
But everybody looks at it and says, oh my gosh, that looks so much fun. It's nothing like television.
Yep. And then they kind of wonder. And that's what I've told people here. And I said, you know, all these things didn't happen like back to back. And, you know, I'll go months without anything. And then boom, all of a sudden I'll have a burst of energy and it'll kind of go crazy. But it doesn't happen like that. I can't, like, you know. So, again, when I see these shows, you're right. I see these shows, and they're like, wow, they get EVPs every time. It doesn't happen like that.
No, it doesn't. So, last question for you, Kevin. Do you have a ghost that you found follows you everywhere you go, that you know who it is at everywhere you go? Or is it wherever you go, it's different ghosts?
Yeah, they're different. I don't have one particular one. I don't have one particular attachment, which is kind of nice. They're pretty much just kind of, I'm at their mercy, so to speak. But yeah, I don't have one particular one that does follow me or is here all the time.
So do you think they're just attached to a certain spot, like a certain house or a certain piece of land?
I think in certain situations they are. For instance, my girlfriend lives in Maryland, and she lives about half a mile from a cemetery, and she has a lot of transient ghost activity because when I'm there, but it's also when I'm not there. So they have a lot of that, and again, that's just, I think, because that's a very old place that she lives in, but also the cemetery is like right down the road. So they have a lot of that activity.
So did she have this activity before she met you, or did it come up out, or did it increase when you started to become in the picture?
No, it increased when I started seeing her. And she's really religious because she's a daughter of a preacher.
Oh, okay.
So this is all really new to her. And I'm trying to slowly incorporate things in, kind of explain, because she doesn't understand any of this and it scares her, and I totally understand that.
So absolutely.
I've been kind of taking her step by step, so to speak, and letting her know, you know, hey, this is this, you know, this shouldn't be, you know, whatever. And just, she still doesn't understand it. She read the book and she said, you know, scared the hell out of her. And I was like, well, you know, and I understand it, because I've told her a lot of these stories before I got published. But so we're kind of working together with that. So it's been really interesting.
It is. And do you feel that, you said at the beginning of the show, you feel like you're an empath. Do you feel that you have grown, if you can, as an empath, because of the experiences you've had? Do you feel that from your very first few encounters when you were younger that you're able to communicate, or you're able to, I guess, see and know what's going on around you more? And is it because of your ability and you're growing as an empath, or is it just because this is what happens every day and you get used to what's going around you?
Actually, no, I think, I actually have grown as an empath. And I realize now that I've always had this ability as a child on up. I just never knew how to harness it, so to speak, or what exactly it was all about. And so now, you know, I've actually, like I said, I'm to the point now, and this has helped me, where I feel things off of people. So if I meet somebody and I feel like bad energy, I know to stay away from those people or go with your gut. That is so true. And I remember how many times growing up I had that gnawing feeling in the gut and dismissed it, and something happened and thought, oh my God, you know. So then I realized, and this is one thing, I actually missed hitting the lottery because I passed up seeing numbers and thought it was, you know, how that, and I actually made the joke, it'd make nice lottery number. And the next day the damn thing hit. So I was like, oh crap. But yeah, and again, I've met some really good people along the way that have actually fostered this and helped me with that. Like, I come to them, and one of my friends who is into shamanic things, I've asked him, I said, is it me sending stuff out or and things coming back? He said, it's both ways. You're a receiver and a catcher. So I'm throwing things out there and it's coming back to me.
Yes.
So that actually kind of made sense. But again, that's one thing. Like I said, if I'm driving down the road and I get a feeling, hey, don't do this, and it saved me. So one thing I always tell people, excuse me, driving in Virginia and in Maryland and Pennsylvania, I pick up things. So I know when deer are coming out on the road, I can pick up on deer. So I know, hey, there's something up here. Let's slow down. And I've been in cars with people that had no idea. And they're like, how the hell did you know that?
Yes.
I said, I just do. So it kind of freaked them out. And one of the things I love to do at work, and I do this, and they've kind of gotten used to it, is I'll tell one of my coworkers, pick up the phone. They'll be like, what? Ring? And they'll all look at me like, So they've kind of gotten used to that. But I still love doing that to them, because they're still like, oh, it's just Kevin, you know, kind of thing.
And it sounds like maybe your mother was somewhat of an empath. Do you think that maybe this is a trait that's passed on?
Yeah, I definitely believe that she had more ability than she let on. And,
right.
And again, she never really talked about that growing up, because there's a lot of issues going on with substance abuse and things like that. So we never really talked about things like that. And by the time I got around to doing that, it was too late. She was gone. But yeah, I believe that... on her side of the family that we had the site. And unfortunately, because they had me late in life, a lot of my relatives on her side have passed on. So I can't really contact anybody, unfortunately. But yeah, I do believe, and even though my father's got, you know, mostly Irish blood in it too, but it's more so on my mother's side. I think that I picked up this ability.
Okay. So, well, the name of the book is Ghosts and Me. And again, where can my listeners download this or go to the store and buy it, Kevin?
They can find that at Ozark Mountain Publishing under my name. I do have an author's page. They can find that at barnesandnoble.com. They can find that at amazon.com and pretty much anywhere that books are sold.
I think I saw online, Target too, right?
Yes.
Target, yep.
Target, I believe it's also at Walmart. They can find them in those two places. And also, if you wouldn't mind, if any of your readers do purchase this, could go on Amazon and give me a decent
five-star review.
There. Yeah, if I could get a review, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. So anybody that downloads this or reads this book, go to Amazon and give them a five-star review. It's a great book. I love how it's just, boom, you're moving on. There's nothing, everything is just, it flows. It's a great read. I'm enjoying it immensely. So
thank you. Thank you. Also, if I could, I include this in the book.
Sure.
At the end. One thing that I do love is I love discourse, and I tell my readers all the time, if you want to talk about spirits or ghosts or anything drug related or anything like that, please feel free to contact me at KKILLEN, B as in boy, T as in Tom, @gmail.com, KKILLENBT @gmail.com, and just hit me up about anything. I love talking to the readers about anything ghostly or anything else, so feel free to hit me up at any time.
That's great. So thank you for joining me. I can't wait for your next book. I hope that comes out pretty soon, because the idea behind that, just, I'm a history buff, and that would just be right up my alley.
Excellent. Well, I thank you for that, those kind words, and I'm working on it, so it should be out hopefully soon.
Good. Let us know when it's out so I can let all my listeners know.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Kevin. It was a great time talking to you, and I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Hey, I did, Tom. Thank you for having me, and I'm up for any time you want me back. Please feel free to ask. And
absolutely. I would be more than happy to have you back.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Kevin. So there you have the interview with author and paranormal experiencer Kevin Killen. I hope everybody enjoyed the interview. Remember, you can get his book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. Download the book, buy the book, and go to Amazon and give it a 5-star review. And don't forget, if you have any questions or anything you want to discuss with Kevin, he gave us his email, kkillenbt@gmail.com. That is KKILLEN, B as in boy, T as in Tom, @gmail.com. He was a great guest. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him, and I hope you enjoyed listening to his experiences. So now we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about the coronavirus. What is it? What exactly is going on with the coronavirus? And is it something that we really should be worried about, or is this just another case of Tom being a fearmonger and the whole Ebola thing? Sit back, relax, open that mind. My name is Tom Balassis. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. I'll be right back. Show me your devotion and let me know it's all. Ghosts and Me, a book about a journey of searching and trying to understand the paranormal. For more than 30 years, Kevin Killen has experienced some form of paranormal activity. His book, Ghosts and Me, explores many of those experiences. From the first time he experienced a ghost at the age of 5 to high school, through his adult years, where he traveled from state to state and job to job, and the paranormal activity followed him. Kevin Killen has won 5 Virginia Press Awards during his time in journalism, and he hopes this book can help others understand the paranormal and to give insight into what others are experiencing. Ghosts and Me can be found at Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon, to name a few. Do yourself a favor, pick yourself up a copy of Ghosts and Me by Kevin Killen, and you will not be disappointed. Ghosts and Me by Kevin Killen. Paranormal Patriot approved. The excitement is building. Plans are already underway. Mark your calendars, Friday, September 11th, and Saturday, September 12th, at the Lakeside Resort and Conference Center in Houghton Lake, Michigan. Be prepared for the 3rd Mid-Michigan UFO contact. The first 2 Michigan UFO contacts brought huge crowds, great vendors, and amazing presenters. This year promises to do the same and more. So again, mark your calendars. Friday, September 11th and Saturday, September 12th at the Lakeside Resort and Conference Center for Michigan UFO Contact 3. Be a witness to one of Michigan's premier paranormal conventions. Friday, September 11th and Saturday, September 12th, 2020 at the Lakeside Resort and Conference Center, the Michigan UFO Contact. First off, I'm able to go over an hour per show now due to the fact that I was on Coming Right Up Radio. The fact that they only had hour time slots, I could only do an hour show. I've been promoting on this show, Coming Right Up Radio, for a year and a half now. And apparently for the last 6 months, they have no longer existed. And I've been promoting them for 6 months. Did I go check? No, my bad. But apparently nobody gave me the info that Coming Right Up is no longer in existence. So I no longer have to adhere to the hour time frame. So that gives me the opportunity to go a little bit farther into this show. Because the next subject I want to talk about is something that I really, truly think that we need to know. It could be me fear-mongering, but there's some things different about this that really concern me. Now, we all know, if you've been listening to the show for a while, that when the Ebola crisis broke out, I was like, oh my God, the world's going to die. The world's going to end. This is the pandemic to end the world. And it didn't happen. And I ate crow, and I admitted it. And I will probably eat crow on this one, but this new coronavirus that is in China right now, honestly, is something to be scared about because they don't know where it came from. There's theories that it came from fruit bat soup. There's videos of people eating soup with fruit bats in them and eating up the bats. I mean, honestly, for those of you in China, is there anything you won't eat? I've seen you eat tarantulas, cockroaches, snakes, now bats in soup, shark fin. I mean, honestly, ease up. Things will kill you, and things will get you sick, just like this one. But then there's also theories that it came from the Chinese cobra, which is a snake, and that gives me every reason to not like snakes even more because they're starting to spread diseases that we have no cure for. But regardless of where it came from, the truth is this is a virus that is rapidly infecting people. As of January 21st, it had infected known infections. And we'll get into this in a second. Known infections of maybe 200 people. By January 23rd, it had been up to at least 800 people. At first, it was 7 people died. Now it's well over 30. The problem is this virus, we'll call it, yeah, I guess it would be a virus, the coronavirus. This virus acts just like pneumonia, the flu, or a cold. So you don't even know you have it. You think you just have the sniffles, and lo and behold, you're spreading a deadly pathogen to an innocent person. Right now, in China, they are taking unprecedented measures. They have essentially, they have quarantined Wuhan. It's a city in China with 11 million people. They have quarantined that city, nobody in or out. They have quarantined multiple other cities. I don't know the names. Huang, I think, is one of them. 5.5 million people. They quarantined another city with 1.1 million people. This isn't just a local Ebola outbreak. This is a major health scare. Now, just today, and this is according to Breitbart. According to Breitbart, China confirms the Wuhan virus infections, which is apparently what they're calling them now. I thought it was the coronavirus. But it has infections in over 90% of the provinces. China state media confirmed on Friday that the coronavirus spreading from the city of Wuhan has now infected 29 of China's 31 provinces, a concession critics will likely take as confirmation that the Chinese government has not been honest about how rapidly this disease is spreading. So, stopping right there, right now we have no idea. No absolute clue how many people are actually infected by this virus. Increasingly draconian measures taken abruptly to combat the virus, such as effectively quarantining Wuhan and several other cities, convey the impression of a crisis that is much more serious than Beijing wanted to admit. The Chinese Communist Party, CCP, media claims that there has only been 895 confirmed cases of the infection and 26 deaths. But these sources now admit that the infection has spread across the mainland, and some of the reported deaths have occurred far beyond the Wuhan epicenter of the epidemic. Furthermore, the South China Morning Post on Friday quoted sources who said the Chinese government is still dramatically underreporting the number of doctors and nurses who have contracted the virus while treating patients. As of Friday, Beijing officially stopped treating the Wuhan virus like a minor problem it had well in hand. In response to the rapidly growing number of infections, China has shut down outboard transport from 13 cities and counties in Hubei by Friday morning. Now, that is according to the China's national radio. Health officials have warned on nationwide broadcasts that people should avoid traditional family reunions and other public gatherings during the Lunar New Year period that starts on Saturday. And that is a huge thing. This time of year, the new Lunar New Year is a huge gathering in China where hundreds of thousands of people gather in one spot. They're telling people, do not gather. Why is that? What does the Chinese government know that we don't know? Do you really believe that the Chinese government is telling you the truth of the severity of this virus? I don't. The Chinese government has been notoriously secretive throughout its whole existence. This is no exception. You have 90% of the provinces in China now having people that are infected. In America here, we have a person in Washington, we have a person in California, and we have a person in Texas that we know about that are testing or being tested for this coronavirus. But again, the problem is this has the symptoms of a common cold. How do you know if you have this virus? You don't. You have to get specialized testing. Now, in this day and age, everybody wants to be a hypochondriac. Everybody wants to get time off of work, whatever it is. But you're going to have people with a common cold saying, oh my gosh, I got the coronavirus. I got to go be hospitalized and quarantined. You are going to have a run of people in emergency departments. You are going to have people who swear up and down they had the coronavirus. It's just the nature of the beast. But in reality, they have a cold. So therein lies the problem. Who has the virus? What specialized tests do we have to precisely determine whether you have the virus? Because right now, In its early stages, this virus is mutating and there's no medicine to combat it. That's the scary part. Every 100 years or so for the last couple centuries, in 1820, 1920, and now 2020, there has been a worldwide pandemic. In the 1900s, it was the Spanish flu. It seems like every 100 years or so, there is a worldwide pandemic that wipes out millions of people. It's like the earth is saying, okay, you're getting too overpopulated. We need to step back a little. Here's a virus that you can't combat. We're going to knock some people off. It'll make it things nice and easy. It's almost like that because it's due. Obviously, it's due. And where did it come from? How did it get here? I mean, I've heard many stories. The snake, the bat, I heard it was from a Wuhan exotic meat market that was illegally selling exotic meat. It doesn't matter. People come and go from China all the time. In this day and age, when you can fly from one continent to the other, in back when the Black Plague was around, back in the 1920s, it took months, weeks to go from one continent to the other. So either you were free of the disease or the pathogen when you got back to the mainland, or you were dead. Now it's ours. So you come into the United States, you think you have a cold. I got a cold in China. That sucks. In the meantime, you've infected 20, 30 people. Those 20, 30 people think, some jerk gave me a cold, gave me the flu. They infect 20, 30 people. The day and age where we can contain a virus like this are gone. There's no way we can do it because of worldwide travel. That is why this one, it seems to be very aggressive. And the worry I have is that it is mutating. And it is mutating very early in its lifespan. So any drug we have, it seems like it has the ability to mutate to combat that. How do you combat that? How do you? You let it run its course? It's a scary situation. This is something we're going to have to keep an eye on. I mean, granted, the United States, I guarantee you, the United States and China are not the only places that have this coronavirus on its shores. Japan, Hong Kong, Thailand, Pakistan, they're already reporting cases. I guarantee you, you're going to see Great Britain, you're going to see France, you're going to see Canada, you're going to see Australia. You're going to see the major continents, the major countries starting to report, we've got this here. I'm worried that there's going to be an actual panic. Because with the Ebola virus, it was pretty much contained. Because we knew what was going on early in the game. We know what's going on early in the game here. The problem is, we don't know how to combat it. We don't have any medicines to eradicate it. And yet people are coming and going. Right now in the United States, there are 5 ports of entry. 5 airports in this country that you go to when you come from China. And you are scanned to see if you have a fever. If you have a fever, you're put into quarantine to check and see if you have a cold, if you have a flu, if you have pneumonia. And that's what this is. This is a respiratory disease. The coronavirus impacts your ability to breathe. And that's how people are dying. There's pictures all over in China. And that's the scary part. There are people walking by, people that have passed out because they can't breathe. Whether or not they're dead, I don't know. I would hope that there's some compassion in China where you see somebody struggling to breathe and they collapse, you just don't keep walking. I don't know. I've never been to China. As of this point, I don't ever want to go. But this is something I think we need to worry about. This, in my opinion, is a little bit more worrisome than Ebola. You know, Ebola, we had it here in the States. We had a couple doctors and nurses get apparently infected. But here, It appears, according to what is leaking out of China, that most doctors and most nurses that are treating patients with the coronavirus end up getting the coronavirus. They don't know if it's passed through saliva. They don't know if it's airborne. It is easily passed from person to person, though, apparently. So what do you do to combat it? Is there anything to do? Right now, I mean, unless you're living in Washington or Texas or California, where this person came into the country from, you know, I don't think you have to worry right now, but this is definitely something I think we should definitely keep an eye on and keep a close eye on, because this could be the pandemic of the 21st century. We had one in 1920. We had one in 1820. Is this the 2020 version of it? I think it's going to be more impactful than SARS was. So let me know. What do you think? That's going to be the show today. I'm going to cut you off at about an hour 20. Man, 20 minutes, hour and 20. Haven't done a show this long in a while. So thank you to Kevin Killen for taking the time to be on the show. Next week, my goal, and I'm hoping this works out. We're still working out the details. I'm hoping to have Seneca and Matthew Diamond on the show. They are Second Amendment activists. I am all over this Second Amendment, this gun grab in Virginia. Here in Michigan, Michigan is starting to build towards making Second Amendment sanctuary cities. And I want to talk to them about the Second Amendment. I want to talk to them what they think about Virginia, the Michigan Second Amendment sanctuary cities, as well as the Second Amendment sanctuary cities across the nation. And we might even talk about impeachment. So I hope you enjoyed this show. I really, truly think this is a show. It is a whole changing show. This is what I want my show to be. I want you to get other people's opinions. Get the paranormal news from another person. Get the political and current event news from another person. Get their opinion, not just mine. It makes my life easier. All I got to do is sit and listen. And I really enjoyed this show. So thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you being on the show. For all of my listeners, get with Kevin Killen and get his book. Contact him on email. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be back next week.
Strong together.